Okay, Yom HaDaf Lamed Aleph. We're on Lamed Amid Beis at the bottom. Mirz Hashem, our learning should be l'schus a calming of the situation in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, we're all keeping close tabs on it, and we're hoping it turns around. Okay, Amr Le'abayler of Yosef. We're in the middle of Machlokas between the Rabbanan and I believe it was Rabbi Yehuda, about whether or not this first tefillah, this first going to the mikvah of the Kohen Gadol, which is not necessary in the same sense the other ones are necessary, but is instead a precautionary measure. So it was Ben Zoma. Ben Zoma had said that it's not really, obligatory in the same sense as the other ones, but it is obligatory from a kavachomer, from the other ones. Because the other ones are going from Kodesh to Kodesh, those are going from Chol to Kodesh. All the more so, it requires the Kohen Gadol to go to the mikvah. However, Rabbi Yehuda thinks that it wasn't really that necessary, and it was just sort of like a reminder, sort of trigger the Kohen whether or not he was tummy from beforehand, in which case it would preclude him from doing the karbonos afterwards. So the question now is, well, this mikvah, this tefillah that we're talking about, to what extent, now that it's not entirely necessary, to what extent does it follow the same rules as the usual going to the mikvah? So Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda to Amar Srach Tefillah Hizu, according to Rav Yehuda, who says that this is not a real tefillah, but rather just not even a precautionary thing, but it's sort of a trigger to remind himself if he's tamei or not. So Chotzei to Eino Chotzei. Right? Are there going to be chatzitzas of the person if there's something stuck on their body and it's not going to allow the water to get in? So are we going to enforce the halachos of chatzitza on a tefillah which really isn't that necessary for the sake of the actual tefillah as much as it is for that triggering? So Gemara says, Amar Lei, kol d'tikun rabbanu kein d'oraisa d'tikun. It's true that this is a rabbinically mandated tefillah. It was instituted by the Rabbanan. But whenever the Rabbanan institutes something, they always do it in line, in the same vein as the Daraisa is. And therefore, even though this case is only a Rabbanan Gezerah, or Takana, it's nonetheless going to have all the same halachos as a usual tefillah. So yes, it is going to be Chotzitz. So then, Amar Le Abayi Rav Yosef, Bia B'mikzah Shema Bia Olo. When we talk about the person is not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash before he does this mikvah, this tefillah, so we just said it's not really true because he's probably tar from the day before it. In which case, what if he puts some of his body in? Typically, you're not allowed to put any of your body in unless you're tahor. But in this case, he's not really tameh, and therefore maybe it wouldn't be a problem to put some of the body in. So Gemara says, Amar Lei, Bahonos Yochichu. The Bahonos are certain things that the Mitzorah has to bring. I don't know literally what are they. What are the Bahonos? Some kind of Ketores mixture or something? They have to do a Mashiach, they have to like anoint their thumbs or something like that in oil. Yeah, blood and then oil. But the rest of their body stays outside of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning they're just putting their hands in. And therefore, it would seem that Bia B'mikzah is not a problem. V'tani mitzor tov omid v'shar nikdor. So therefore... Therefore, B'mikzah is not a problem, because the Mitzorah does it too. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. What about these propositions? Ibai lehu, mashiasa sakin aruka v'yishkot, tibai lemenzoma. What about making a long knife and allowing the person to do a shechita? We talked about this jokingly last week, but it's a real question. So what can you make a long knife in order to do the shechita? Right, a non-kohen. So the Gemara says, or a kohen who's tamei. Which was really the second one in terms of the Mitzorah. So Tibayla Benzoma Ad Kan Lumachai Benzoma El Gavai. The only time Benzoma says that a person would have an obligation to go to the mikvah is specifically if they're going to go inside. Avali Brailo. So maybe the Shkita would be fine according to Benzoma. O Dilma. Asidim Shuchay, or maybe Ben Zoma is worried that because he is on the threshold of the Beis HaMikdash, maybe he's going to lean over and come into the Beis HaMikdash, which would be against, in violation of Ben Zoma's opinion, Ben Zoma's obligation that he has to go to the mikvah. Alternatively, Tzivay L'Rabbanan D'Pligilei D'Rabbi Yehuda, it's also going to be a machlokas against. It would be a question against the Rabbanan who disagree with the Rabbi Yehuda. Right, the Rabbanan had said that the mitzvah has to go to the mikvah in the morning again. Ad kan lo kamar Rabbanan hasam d'lo kavod avoda. The Rabbanan, even though in that case they would patter you from doing it, meaning they required going to the mikvah, but they did not say that it was ma'akev. Let me see again. The Braisa had said, hold on. Mitzora tov omen b'shar niknor. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Tzarech Tevila Shekhar Tov Milarev. We really brought it up for Rabbi Yehuda, but the Rabbanan said that he has to go to the mikvah. But they're allowed to Shar, they're Omer B'Shar Niknor, they're allowed to stand B'Shar Niknor, even though they still need to, even though they're not done their kapara. So in that case, the Rabbanan say he's allowed to stand there to lo kavod avod, because he's not doing anything. But here, maybe they wouldn't allow him to do it because he's doing an actual avoda, and therefore it requires even more of a full tahara process. Yeah. Or maybe it doesn't make a difference, and they would still be okay for him to stand there without his full tefillah. I still don't understand how this is the shita of the Rabbanan, given that they said that you do have to. I said before that it's referring to the Shar Niknor part of their opinion, but not really sure. I don't know. Either way, we don't know the answer, and therefore we have to wait for Eliyahu HaNavi to tell us. Okay, so we had said in the Mishnah, Chamesh Tvilos V'Asari Kiddushin Tovel. So the Kohen Gadol goes through a bunch of different mikvah appointments. And then he goes and he does also the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim between all the Avodas. So Tana Rabbanan, Chamesh Tvilos, Vasara Kiddush and Tova Kohen Gadol, Mekadosh Bo Bayom, Bekulim Bakodosh Beis HaParva, Chus Mirishona. All of these happen inside of the Azara, inside the Beis HaParva, except for the first one, Shaisa Bachol, Agabi Shah HaMayim, Uvitzad Lishkatso Haisa. This was done on the outside of the Beis HaMikdash, or the outside of the Azara, by the Shar HaMayim. If you remember, it's one of the gates on the retaining wall of the Beis HaMikdash. And it was a place where they would bring water. So here too, they had water there. And it was right next to, it was on that side of the Beis HaMikdash, right next to where the Kohen Gadol stays. So the question was, Amar Abaye Shema Mina, I ain't a tam. That the water there it was above the water. Is that what it was saying? Al Gabe Shaharmai must have been above the gate of the water. Okay. So it's the Ein Eitam. That means that it was that's what it was called. What is
Ein Spring?
That's in the, right, that's what it was called. So, Ein Eitam, Gavo.
3 kilometers southwest of Bethlehem,
connected by a wall. Oh, so they're just telling us what that spring is called. Gavo Mikarka Azara Esri Mishal Shamas. It's above the floor above the ground, 23 amos. How do you know? Ditznan, the Mishnah says, Kol psach shayisham govhan esrim ama v'rachban eser amos, chutz mishel ulam, right? The ulam was taller, it was 40 amos. But the other ones were 20 amos tall, the other entrances. V'tanya, and it says, v'rachatz b'mayim es kol b'saro. B'mayim means b'mei mikvah, in the actual water. Kol b'saro means all of his body. And therefore, mayim shekol gufa ola b'hen, v'kamahen ama al ama b'rom shalosh amos. Has to be at least 3 amos tall. V'shiru chachamim mei mikvah arba'im sa. And because of that, it says there has to be 40 sa of water in the mikvah. And therefore, what you see is that the gate itself was 20, and then above that, the mikvah was, that had to be another 3. So there you go. It had to be 23 amos above the ground, which was itself above the actual gate. I don't know. I would really like to see a diagram of this, because that doesn't make it, I mean, I just can't picture how high up that is. That seems very high up. Of the what?
The aqueducts.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't need...
My impression is it just flowed down naturally.
Right, it seems like a very steep incline.
But it's going a long distance.
I'm saying that, I assume, we just said it was bitzad lishka sohaisa, right? We just said it was next to his chamber. So to be next to his chamber means that it must have been like relatively close by. But if it was relatively close by, it must have been a steep incline from the actual gate to get up to the mikveh that was above it. If it was really next to, I mean, it could have been like a football field away, that makes sense. But my impression is that it's like right next to it.
The spring itself from which the water was coming?
No, where, oh, you're saying that the spring itself far away was above that.
Right.
I'm assuming that what this means is that the mikveh was above it.
The mikveh was above it, but the spring was even higher than that.
Right, but I'm saying that the shar, the actual gate, was 20 amos tall.
Yeah.
And the actual mikveh was above that. And the mikveh obviously is in the ground, I assume, isn't it?
My impression is not.
I think it says something about it.
It's not in the ground?
There's a picture up here, and it's on a balcony.
Yeah.
And you climb a stairway. There's a stairway here.
So then how did the water get into the Gemara's going to ask this, I think, in some ways. How did the water flow into the mikveh? I guess that's my question. If it's above that, meaning it's not actually connected to the stream itself, or to the ground where the stream would flow, so how did it get there?
It's connected from an aqueduct, but that's puzzling to me. Is this an aqueduct way up?
That's what I'm saying. Is there like a piping?
That's what the implication is.
Yeah, it must. I can't picture how that. Maybe it runs along the wall, and then you have like some kind of stream or some kind of bridge that brings the water over. I don't know.
I don't think it's allowed to pump it.
Yeah, no. That's why it has to go by gravity, and it can't be sitting in any other receptacle. So
it has to just flow.
Yeah, I don't know. I know the piping system is very complicated if you would do it with pipes. All right, it must have been done somehow. But the question here is, wait a second, 23 amos, that's it? Isn't there an opening, isn't there a some kind of threshold above the gate? V'ha'ika ama tikra v'ama ma'aziva. Is there not the thickness of the roof and the thickness of the ma'aziva, is that the spout? I think that's... Is that the spout?
Marziva, just says pavement.
A pavement? Okay.
Pavement under the
Megillah. Right. Meaning the floor, meaning the roof of the shahr and the floor of the mikvah, both require some kind of thickness. So Gemara says no. Sha'arim debes hamigdash kevin deshishanin hu b'mashu avdilhu, because they were marble. So marble shayish, right?
Yes.
Marble. So then it was able to be done even in a small amount because it was a harder substance. Vahika ha'ich mashu. There's got to be something there. If it's marble, there's got to be no kevin lo have ma'is amza lo chashiv le, because it wasn't even an amma's worth, so we didn't even consider it. But it's probably, in a Hanami, it's probably 23 and a half amma's, something like that. Okay. I'm not exactly sure in terms of the physics of it or the architecture of it, but that's how it goes. Paras esad and shalbots, they would have this, fence or covering of some kind, this tarp, a sheet of flax. So Maishna shall boats. Why does it say specifically a flax? So you can understand that this is what he's going to change into. So that he's changing out of?
They're using a linen sheet so that it's kind of a reminder that he will conduct the Yom Kippur service in linen garments. Why you would need such a thing? I mean, you know, it doesn't strike me as something compelling, but that's what it says.
Yeah, right. Kadesh Yakir Avodas Yom Hayom Bevigde Boats.
Here to a linen sheet that you so it'll be aware of the service of the Yom Kippur's performed in fine linen garments.
Right, why do we need to know that? I don't know.
So the Kohen Gadol in the late years apparently was on appeal.
Uh-huh. So this is sort of a reminder that everybody else should know that he knows what he's doing, that he's putting on the right clothes. Because the partition is for everybody else to not see in, right? That was the sort of the modesty of it. So now you were asking, why is the modesty partition made of this material? And now we're saying it's for the Kohen himself? Right. Yeah. All right. Don't put the wrong clothes back on after you go to the mikvah, I guess. I don't know. All right. New Mishnah. Yeah. Pashat Yarad V'Taval. He took off his regular weekday clothes. He goes into the mikvah. And Allah V'Nistapeg. He would then get up and he would dry off. Haviyulo Bigdei Zav. Then they bring him his golden clothes. V'Lavash Kiddush. And he wears them. And after he wears them, v'kidesh ad v'raglav, and then he would sanctify his hands by putting them in the kiyor. Okay.
And his feet.
What?
And his feet.
And his feet, yeah.
They use ordinary water for the kiyor.
I assume so. I don't remember. It couldn't be, I don't think it could be halachically the same because it was a receptacle. It was a big thing, so I don't know. So, Hevilo es ha-tamid, right, so this is for the carbon tamid. He puts on the regular Kohen Gadol garments, the golden ones, for the sake of the carbon tamid. So, Hevilo es ha-tamid, kratzo, right, he cuts the neck, meaning he does the part of the shechita, which is the most important, the cutting off the two simanim, what is it, the trachea and the esophagus. Umeirik acher, somebody else, the other Kohen, finishes off the whole shechita. Umeirik acher shechita al yado. Kibel es hadam, right, the Kohen Gadol then accepts the blood of the Karman Tamid. Uzrako, and then he sprinkles the blood on the outer mizbeach, on the two of the corners. And then nichnas lahakdir ketor shel shachar. Then he brings the ketoris of the carbon tamid. Ulehetiv es haneris. Then he goes. This is all done inside of the ulam, inside of the hechal. Right, he does the ketoris on the inner smaller mizbeach, and he sets up the candles. You're removing the old ones and cleaning out the receptacles, and then he puts in the new oil. And then he brings the carbon tamid limbs on the mizbeach. And he puts in the new frankincense for the tamid. Right, half was for the tamid shoshach, half was for the tamid ben harbaim. He did 12 of them. That's and then he would do also the wine libations. Okay, so that's process number one for the sake of the tamid. The morning one would be done between the sprinkling of the blood on the mizbeach hachitzon and the bringing of the limbs on also the mizbeach hachitzon. Right, so that's why he's doing the blood, going inside, and then coming back out to do the evarim. Shabbein harbaim, however, bein evarim lina hasachim. But in the one in the afternoon, after he puts the limbs on the mizbeach, but before he does the nisach hayayin, so then that's when he does the ketores on the mizbeach hapnimi, on the inside. So he's going back and forth a little bit. Im haya kohen gadol zaken, o istinis, mechamen lo chamen umatil into chatzon in kedesha tafik tzinasan. If the kohen was a little older, unclear what this means, because kohanim, I don't think, could be over 50 years old, but actually, no.
I think the
Kohen Gadol might have an exception to that rule. Yeah.
You know, the infamous case of the guy who was Kohen Gadol
for like 60 years. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I was just thinking of that. So it must be that the Levi rule doesn't apply to the Kohen Gadol as much. So either way, so the Kohen Gadol, if he was older and it's difficult for him to go into the mikveh when it's so cold, or if he's generally a sensitive person, so then we heat up the water a little bit. We don't heat up the mikveh water. We heat up water, and then we pour it into the mikveh. Probably some interesting discussions here in terms of the mevadlin isra chachila. You can't technically put more stuff in, but it's batal once you put it in. Maybe it's because it's a derabanan. Either. Oh, so this, they would heat it up before Yantif.
Yeah, but then they mixed it in the cold.
Right, so then they put it, but there are exceptions to heating up if it's an overwhelming amount, where there's not one that's going to overpower the other. Right, so you could put like an ice cube in something hot, for instance, on Shabbos. Because it's not heating, you're not considered like it's a real heating up or cooling down. I mean, it depends how you do it, but yeah. So then, also they could potentially use like these big iron, like poles or something like this. I know that there are like these poles that they would heat up, and then they would put them inside of the mikvah to warm it up also. But the heating up would happen before Yom Kippur. Okay, before Yom Kippur. So Omer Rabbanan Kamed Rav Papa. So the Rabbanan say to Rav Papa, Ha delok Rabbi Meir. This Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir. De'i Rabbi Meir, if it was according to Rabbi Meir, Kevan da Amar Tre Kidushe Aliv Alevisha Avid Lehu, that because the Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that the Kohen Gadol would do two separate sanctifications, meaning he would wash his hands and feet before and after he got dressed. Meaning before he goes into the mikveh, even. That's what it's saying here. Okay. We'll continue going and see if that works. Hachanami levit trei kedusha levisha. So presumably here, Rabbi Meir would also say that the Kohen Gadol should wash his hands and feet before he got dressed and after he got dressed. So Amar l'Rav Papa, bein l'Rabbanan, bein l'Rabbi Meir. No, it's not true. It could work with Rabbi Meir too. Chad apshita debigdei kodesh. V'chad alavisha, one of the washings would happen after he took off his golden clothes, and one would happen when he puts them on. Here, this is what Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan usually disagree about. When the Pesukim say that by Yom Kippur, you would take it off, you would wash, and then you would wear them. So Rabbi Meir Savar Makish Pshita Lilavisha, that we carry over the conditions of taking off the clothes to putting on the clothes. Ma Lavisha Lo Vishvi Achar Kach Mekadesh, just like when you put the clothing on and then you sanctify it. Af Pshita, when you take the clothing off, Poshet Vi Achar Kach Mekadesh, you take them off and then you actually you wash your hands and feet. And therefore, in this case, when you're not taking off the Big Day Kodesh, so then there wouldn't be even according to Rabbi Meir, there wouldn't be a sanctification, a washing of hands and feet beforehand. V'rabbanan savri, makish pshita lilavisha. It goes the other way. Malavisha kshu lavush mekadesh. Only once you're dressed do you actually wash your hands and feet. Af pshita kshu lavush mekadesh. So too, when you're washing your hands and feet in order to take the clothing off, that's also when you do the sanctification. So here, it's only when they would take off when the Kohen Gadol would take off the special clothing, would they have machlokas about whether or not you do it after you take it off or while it's still on. But in terms of putting the clothes on for the first time of the day, so Rabbi Meir didn't think. Rabbi Meir never said. According to Rav Papa, Rav Meir never said that you would require a washing before you take it before you put them on. Also, Amar Rabban and Rav Papa, umima tzasamer hachi. Is that really true that Rav Meir only says that? Only says when you're taking clothing off. Tanya, but didn't we learn in the Brisa? Paris v'sadin shabbos beino lebein am upashat v'yarad v'taval. Allah in his topic, right? That's our Mishnah basically. And then he would wash his hands and feet. Rabbi Meir Omer, however, in this brisa, Rabbi Meir is quoted in saying, Pashad Vikide Shadav Raglav, he takes off his regular clothing, he washes his hands and feet. Viyarad Vitaval Avanistapi Vila Big Dekosh Vilavash Vikidishadavaraglav. So here in this brisa, Rabbi Meir explicitly disagrees and says that you need to wash your hands twice, as opposed to Tanakam, which says you don't have to. And our Mishnah, which says you don't have to. And Meir here says, when you take off your regular clothing, you wash your hands, and then you go into the mikvah, and then you wash your hands again after you put on the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. So Gemara says, yeah, Amar Lahu Itanya Tanya. But can't disagree. If that's a brisa, so then we can't disagree with the brisa. And therefore, that's the machlokas. It must be that this Mishnah is not going according to Rabbi Meir. Now we're going to see after this, Mirat Hashem, tomorrow, when it comes to, we're going to get our calculators out, because when it comes to the mikvah that we mentioned, you do it 10 times, right? You do the mikvah 5 times, and you do the washing of the hands and the feet 10 times. So now we have to work out the numbers. Right now, Rabbi Meir has an extra hand washing that the Rabbanan don't have. So the next part of the Gemara is basically going to go through what exactly happens if for the Rabbanan, where's the extra washing of the hands? Because the Mishnah seems to be agreed upon by everybody that it's 10. Now we just have to figure out how we get there. Okay, Shkach.